Okay. I hereby call to order this regular meeting of the DESDD District Central Independent Oversight Committee. Today's date is October 23rd, 2023. And the time is 10:01. This is a regular meeting of the IOC. It is being held electronically. It is being recorded and the transcript of that recording will be posted on the ADOA IOC website. And in an effort to avoid excess background noise and potential microphone feedback, please mute your microphone when you're not speaking. The host of the meeting, that would be Michelle, can mute you, but then you can also unmute yourself when you would like to speak. And you can do that by clicking on the microphone icon at the bottom left of your screen or elsewhere, depending on the platform. Additionally, I've been asked to read the following statement. Do we have anyone that has to disclose a conflict of interest? And if there is, the committee, that committee member needs to disclose why? I don't think we have any at this point. And we will now do the introductions of those present. My name is Linda Meekum, and I am the chair of District Central Independent Oversight Committee. Debbie.
My name is Debbie Stapley. I'm the vice chair of the Independent Oversight Committee, District Central.
Eva.
Eva Hammond, a member of ILC.
Mandy.
Mandy Hartman, ILC.
Carolyn. Are you on mute, Carolyn? You're on mute, Carolyn.
Start six, Carolyn.
Lisa.
Lisa Ellenberger, a member of IOC.
Okay.
I'm here. Sorry, Linda. It wouldn't let me unmute.
That's okay. I know we're going, you're on mute. Star six, we are mute. That's okay. All right. Thank you for joining us. Michelle, I'll let you introduce everybody else or call on them.
Okay, certainly. We've got Leah Gibbs.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Leah Gibbs, Administrator of the Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
James Mayo.
James Mayo, Quality Assurance Manager for District Central.
Joan McQuaid.
Good morning, Joan McQuaid, Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
Larry Allen.
Good morning, Larry Allen with the Arizona Department of Administration, the IOC.
Dawn McReynolds.
Good morning, everybody. I'm not sure if you can hear me. Dawn McReynolds with United Healthcare. I'm the OIFA administrator.
Ian Wilson.
Hi, everybody. Ian Wilson here with United Healthcare's Community Plan. I'm a member advocate.
Summer Kamal.
Good morning, everyone. This is Summer Kamal, the Behavioral Health Coordinator for Mercy Care.
My name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm the DDD Independent Oversight Committee Liaison. Did I miss any staff or anyone from Access or the health plans?
This is Frederica Graham with Access.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Frederica. Thank you.
Is Patricia on right now? Patricia Sandino?
No.
I just got a text from her. She's got a new admin starting today, so she'll be on and off. So when she comes on, we'll let her do a PRC update, okay? okay. when she comes on. All right, because she'll be in and out. let's see. So did we get everybody? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. While we're on the membership and introductions, I would just like to, just at this point, those of you that weren't aware, Eduarda has passed away, and her service was Saturday, and several of us attended. Carol McNulty and Eva and Carolyn and I were there, along with James. It was a lovely service. Her son, Mark, who is in an ICF, they brought him for part of it. And it was just lovely to see all of those individuals. And his support coordinator of 10 years was also there and spoke about Eduarda and her dedication. It was a lovely service. And just Eduarda and her advocacy and her her zeal, if you will, enthusiasm to ensure that the educational needs of the DD members were met was very impressive. And so, and just wanted to throw that in, that she will be missed on our committee for sure. So thanks everybody for that. I appreciate that, your notes for all of us. She's a loss. Do we have anybody from the public? I didn't see that. No? Okay.
I believe we do have one person. I know that your invited guest wanted to attend just to kind of sit in and listen in, yeah. but didn't wish to be invited. I mean, didn't wish to be announced as a member just at yet this time, or an applicant just yet at this time.
So is Angela on?
Potentially. There is someone on with a phone number ending in 47.
Angela, if that's you, would you like to introduce yourself or? No? Okay. Well.
Hi there. Sorry about that. I was figuring out how to unmute. Yes. I'm here. This is Angela. I just would like to just sit in and for this first meeting, and then I'll get back to Michelle later today.
Okay, and Larry as well. I think Larry sent you an email too. Yes. Angela, I really do appreciate you being here. Pat O'Connell is a common friend to both of us, and she has apparently discussed us with Angela, and we're so grateful to have her on, have you on today. Thank you. And if you are interested and get back with Michelle and Larry, there are a few forms that need to be filled out, and we will, when you're comfortable, to just talk to us as a committee and give us your background and what your interests are and that sort of thing. we would be happy to visit with you. And then we will vote on you the following month to be on the committee. So that's kind of how the process works. But we're grateful to have you on board. And if you have questions, just write them down and you and I can chat after if you wish. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Angela. All right, Leah, I'm going to go to you since you need to hop off here.
Thank you.
And while I assume you're going to be talking about the sunsetting, correct?
I am.
Okay, and then while you're also, could you give the statewide IOC update from Zane? Just do your updates.
Yes, ma'am. I'm happy to do that. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Linda had reached out asking about the criteria of when a member, the term being used is sunsetting, would no longer be considered actively involved in the program review committee process, and what that criteria might look like. And in the question and what has come up in previous dialogue is if a member has a diagnosis of dementia or some other degenerative process going on, would they automatically then no longer be considered for needing a behavior treatment plan and part of the program review committee process? And I have been in contact with our program review committee group of folks, and the answer to the question is not a black and white answer. That if a member has a diagnosis of dementia or some other type of degenerative process, as we all know, it is going to affect people differently at different times as that disease progresses. The criteria that the Program Review Committee wants to utilize for considering no longer having a plan for someone would be at the point in time that that individual would no longer be able to participate in their program, in their positive teaching strategy, to be able to learn and continue to learn alternative ways to cope and to express their needs without having to have those target type of behaviors. And so it's going to be subjective. It's not going to be a black and white based on a diagnosis. It's going to be at such time that the team is in agreement and would submit to PRC information about the member and what's happening and their inability to be able to participate and benefit from the program. That would be the point in time that the PRC then on a case-by-case basis would sunset that individual member. So it's not going to be based on a particular diagnostic label. It's going to be more based on how that member is able to participate. Does that help clarify, Linda? You are muted, my friend.
That's my understanding of it, as I have, I mean, it, and that has evolved over the years, as you know. So, but Lisa was the one in particular that asked the question. So Lisa, does that answer your concerns?
Yeah, it not necessarily, but it does. I mean, it gives a baseline for it. What I'm kind of looking at is the functionality, like of when, like, okay, what are some questions or what are some, if we get to a plan where it appears that the individual may be considered to where they may not be benefiting from the plan, such as they may have dementia, are in their late 70s and recently had a stroke and is in the plan states that they is describing them, the individual as more mobile and being able to speak. However, the individual no longer speaks now.
Can I just ask, Lisa, was that plan disapproved based upon the level of performance? I mean, clearly the individual can't do it and they would need to come back with something else. But,
exactly.
Right. I mean, so what was the disposition on that? Do you remember?
We moved forward with the plan. And in, I think that there was, it was just kind of gray. It was like, okay, well, let's just wait and see how the individual is within the, I mean, it was kind of this unclear and it didn't really describe the individual's functionality at the time. Like the plan no longer described the individual's abilities to participate in the plan. However, I think and correct me if I'm wrong, if Michelle's on the plan, if Michelle's on the phone, but I think it was like, okay, well, we'll keep the plan in place and describe the current and new medical background, et cetera. It was very vague.
And Lisa, if I could jump in a little bit, I obviously was not in that PRC and I do not have that plan in front of me, but I would say to you that if a member has had a change in medical status, for example, a stroke, we all know that through therapy and through intervention, that that person may very well recover back to a baseline and be able to participate. To sunset is considered kind of a permanent process.
Correct.
Okay. So it's very possible, and I don't want to, again, put myself into the shoes of the folks at that PRC, but knowing that that member may be temporarily unable to participate as compared to permanently unable to participate.
And I think that that was the kind of where they were leading into. I think that's the generality of it. However, I don't want to go into it too, because it's a public meeting.
Right.
There's more that I can share, but I just don't know if this is something that would be more likely discussed in
executive.
Exactly.
Yeah, if it's very member specific, absolutely. And I'm trying to speak in terms of generalities for you.
Generality, I completely understand, and I completely understand that with a stroke or with certain medical or certain new accidents or medical conditions that there could be therapies, and there are therapies that could potentially allow the individual to progress or redevelop or different abilities.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's a case by case. I think my question might be more, I'd like to maybe discuss it a little bit more in executive, because I think that at that time, then I'd be able to go into the details of what my thoughts were. And I understand why we moved forward with the plan in this particular situation.
I appreciate that. Linda, again, I want to apologize to the committee, but I am expecting a call at 11. I do not know that I would be back. If I am able to, and with an invitation, I'd be happy to sit in an executive session. Please know I may not be able to today.
That's fine. I appreciate that. You are invited. So thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have the link for the executive? In case you're
able. I do not have a link for executive.
Okay, Michelle, you'll send that to her. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Leah.
Thank you. So updates for the committee that Zane shared during the statewide IOC meeting. He wanted to reiterate to the committee that the division continues to focus very heavily on improving the quality and the benefits of our relationship with the behavioral health provider community and supporting DDD members. That part of one of our ARPA projects is providing training specifically to behavioral health professionals on best practices on supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. That committee has worked very hard to expand the library of computer-based training courses that are available to all behavioral health professionals throughout the state through the Relias training platform. They have added a little over 100 new classes specific to people with ID and DD diagnoses and supporting folks. They have also identified a core curriculum of 12 different courses that the division is incentivizing the behavioral health providers by having at least 10% of their workforce completing those 12 courses, plus taking one. It's an instructor-led live course through Relias platform that is co-trained with our Behavioral Health Administration, as well as representatives from our OIFA team here in DDD, to better teach the behavioral health providers specifically about how the division operates, on what we can and cannot do, on our eligibility, on our services, on how we want to work collaboratively through the behavioral health providers for what's best for our members. Those trainings are going to start rolling out next month. They're going to occur for an extended period of time, initially for 6 months weekly, and it will be evaluated after that. But we continue to want to make that available to the behavioral health community. our second project in improving the relationship and behavioral health for our members is moving forward with our positive behavior support training that is being rolled out not only for interested family members and caregivers at no cost to them. It is being required by the direct support professionals who work in our DDD supported group homes and intermediate care facilities. And it is going to be incentivized for qualified vendors to roll out the training for their direct support workforce. That training curriculum has been initially reviewed. It has been presented to our executive leadership. We just did a workshop presentation of the curriculum with some of the direct support professionals in our state operated program, as well as some of the master trainers and some of the qualified vendor community to do a workshop walkthrough through content. And we're going to do a second workshop of content in early November with some family members, as well as other interested folks from the master trainer community. In January is when we plan to roll out the train the trainer for that, so that we have a consistent training of how that material is delivered. So far, the feedback we've received has been very, very positive, including correcting some communication around a specific concern shared by our IOC. And that has to do with having a conversation about punishment, helping people recognize what punishment might look like, even though people think they're doing it in the betterment of the behavior for the individual, in helping people understand that in a positive behavior support platform, we're teaching people different ways rather than punishing people for behavior. So that's all part of that curriculum. We have contracted with Raising Special Kids, who is going to be the agency that will provide that training statewide to family members and interested caregivers, as well as any interested independent oversight committee members who would like to take that training. They will be providing that to you. They plan to provide the training in evenings and weekends and different times to accommodate folks. They are also going to be sponsoring a weekly technical assistance drop-in call for people who've completed the training, who are implementing the skills that they've learned and maybe are having some barriers or questions and would like to be able to draw from some subject matter experts. So that will also be part of that rollout. Our third process that we're doing is how we are supporting people who have complex behavioral health and developmental disability needs through a special type of group home called a behavioral supported group home. It was part of legislation last year, and it will be a new licensure type of group home as the Department of Health Services rolls out the rules around that licensure. In the meantime, the division is supporting enhanced behavioral group homes. Hi, Linda, go ahead.
I just have a question. Are those behavioral supported group homes, are they under DHS, or are they and monitored by DHS, or does DDD play a role in that? And will we see incident reports on those?
Absolutely. They are still DDD group homes, just like our current group homes are licensed by the Department of Health Services.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We monitor and they monitor. Okay. So it's the same kind of thing. It'll just be under a different set of rules.
Right.
And so those are continuing to grow. I think that Zane had mentioned that the division has been struggling a little bit with our current qualified vendor network around interest and training of the vendor community to meet those service needs for those complex members. So we are looking at doing an RFP, a request for proposal, and reaching out to expand that network to people who may not be currently qualified vendors, with the goal of, once we find those providers who have that skill set, to then transition them to be a vendor eventually. In addition, Zane shared with the group about the work that we're doing around our request for a qualified vendor application. It has been a little over 10 years since the division has updated its contract with the qualified vendor community. So we are rolling out a new contract that is going into effect in March of 2024. Starting in September, all of the existing qualified vendors who are contracted with the division are undergoing the process of applying for the new contract. Our contracts administration is doing regular drop-in technical assistance sessions so that vendors who might be struggling with how to fill out that new application can contact and call in and get the assistance that they need in order to be successful in that transition. There are a little over 1,000 qualified vendors on contract at this time that are transitioning to the new contract come March. Our absolute number one goal is to have no break in service whatsoever for any members. If by any reason a contractor decides that they may not want to continue the relationship with the division, we will be working with all of their direct support staff and transition those members to other qualified vendors so that there will be no break in service through this transition. As of today, I am unaware of any vendor who has said, I'm not going to do this. So we are doing everything we can to make this as smooth a transition as we can. We are tracking those vendors who have started the new application process. We're reaching out to those who have not started yet to make sure they're aware they need to get this done. And we're working toward that. The last update that Zane shared was related to, I don't have my notes in front of me, Linda. It is to the accreditation of the division for the National Committee, right, of Quality Assurance. And as an IOC, you are seeing more and more policy updates coming your way for that 30-day advance period before they go out for public comment. And the reason for that is us working very hard to comply with the standards and requirements of that accreditation. And in the long run, what it does is make us much more transparent in our policies to the public about the work that we do and how we do it and what's happening out there. It's going to take well over a year to get there. Our goal is to be accredited by 2025, but it is part of why you're seeing so many changes in policies that are coming your way. So those are the biggest three that we discussed as part of that committee. Anybody, any questions? Hi, Eva.
Okay, so later on in the agenda, we have the access grant for people with IDD mental health, and I saw you and Mary DiCarlo's name on the survey thing, and I was wondering, is DDD doing anything to help get this survey out to our members?
Yes. Absolutely. It's going more than just the membership. It's going to go out through our newsletters to our qualified vendor community, to our own staff, as well as members of the public who receive our e-newsletter. Eva, I don't have dates for that yet. The program is called START, S-T-A-R-T, but they're going to do a full survey out. And with us, we have already spoken with our communications team about that. They are also going to be doing some targeted forums with different folks within the community around getting that feedback of our current processes that are in place. At this point, people have not been identified yet. It's been more of a higher level of what types of cross-representation do they want to seek out, and we're working with our Behavioral Health Administration to identify folks who would be invited in for forums. There has not been a specific conversation about IOC membership. However, I'm happy to take that back if there is an interest.
Well, we all got notified for the webinar, and I took it, and it's on our agenda. And so our support coordinator is going to
So I missed when you talked about all those people. So
for the surveys, yes, it's going to go out to our own staff through our ECHO, which is our internal communication. It's going to go out to our provider community through our SHOUT, which is their newsletter. And it's going to go out to everyone who receives our OIFA e-newsletter. So that's members and families and anyone who has signed up to receive that newsletter.
Oh, okay. Because I was trying to figure out how to get that survey out. So that's
going to get out. Definitely okay. Going to get out.
So the people who are not in DD or have the other issues. So because it includes people in DDD and people who are not. So I was just wondering if there was anything, because sometimes you have people that only get case management. So I don't know if they get all those newsletters or not.
They do.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's our entire population.
Okay. Because people who are not in our population are also included in this survey.
But I don't have a way to get the survey out to them.
Okay. That I need to know. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Any other questions for me? Thank you, Linda, for letting me have that opportunity. Oops, Eva has her hand up.
Literally,
So something was brought up at the statewide meetings, and I needed to ask you because I thought you were the one that years ago, when DD got dinged for not complying or whatever, and you
which
had
one was
a,
that, right, Leah?
Keep going, well, Eva, about what?
Which thing?
Weren't you the one that had us all go out and monitor the ICF?
No, ma'am.
No. I'll bring that up, Eva.
I thought it was you, but I just wanted to ask you.
No. Sorry, no.
No problem.
Because I thought it was you, so I just wanted to ask you before you left.
No problem, and I'm still here, just till about 11.
So additionally, with regards to the statewide, we'll jump down to item number 10. On the agenda was also, and this was brought up by District West, IOC's monitoring the group homes. And this is where this came in, what Eva was asking. Personally, I don't want to monitor group homes. We've got enough on our plates, and I said so in this meeting. That's my personal opinion. If you guys are interested in monitoring group homes, going in and monitoring group homes, you know, we can certainly discuss that at our next meeting. It's not a topic on the agenda, just as an update for what happened at statewide. So if this is something that you got that our IOC is interested in pursuing, we can put on the agenda and discuss that further. Personally, I think we have enough to do with oversight. And I don't believe even that is within the scope of the statute that we monitor group homes. What happened with regards to the ICFs was, and I brought this up at the meeting, and I have done research since the meeting, Leah, that what happened was access needed eyes and ears, independent eyes and ears on the ICFs. At the same time, they also needed someone to sit in on an independent oversight committee. And because the ICFs, and Angela, those are the intermediate care facilities, how do I put this? Leah, what are ICFs? Tell her. You've got such politically correct wording today.
Intermediate care facilities are historically been termed institutions. They are they fall under the federal code of regulations. They are specific for people who have intellectual disabilities who would benefit from active treatment. And in the state of Arizona, we have intermediate care facilities that are located in Coolidge, that have multiple facilities on the grounds. There are 4 intermediate care facilities currently in Phoenix that are state operated and 1 private intermediate care facility. Part of the Division of Developmental Disabilities relationship and the work that we do is to try to promote having people live in the community in a more cost-effective manner than living in an intermediate care facility or institution. Does that help some, Linda?
It does. Thank you.
Thank you.
So because, and I didn't realize we had 4. I thought we only had 3 in Phoenix, but at the time we had 3. And we as an IOC were asked to go visit them on behalf of Access for Independent Eyes and Ears for them. We only did it the one time. We have not done it since then. And Frederica, maybe you can, follow up on that to see if we are supposed to still be doing that. Also at that time, as I mentioned, they also asked that a member or a staff from the ICFs be on our independent oversight committee. And that was when Marlene Riggs came on board, and she served on the committee for several years until such time as the guidelines for who was to be running or working in the ICFs. I think they changed that it all had to be a nursing staff, something to that effect. Is that correct? James or Leah would know that, but I believe that was what the status was, that it needed to be nursing staff at the ICFs. And because Marlene did not have a nursing degree, she went and is working in another facility. And at that time, she resigned from the committee because she was no longer on the ICFs. So that's what that was all about. And when I said that, Zane was surprised because, and I think that it must have been done before he came on board as DDD director. So he was not aware that we had done that. But that was the only reason that we did it, was because we were asked to do it by Access as DDD to have someone do that for Eyes and Ears. So that was what that was about. There was quite a discussion with regards to group home monitoring. And as I said, we can discuss that another meeting if we all want to pursue that. And pretty much that was, for me, that was the takeaway from our statewide. Lisa, you had your hand up.
I did. I just wanted to mention that I think I was around during that time when we did go and visit the ICFs in the Phoenix, the state ICFs. And I think from my understanding as well, I think that the IOC many, many years ago did monitor group homes. They would go into the group homes when my Aunt Carol was, like 20 years ago. And I don't know if it was through the ARC and IOC and, HRC, excuse me.
Leah, do you want to address that?
Thank you. Actually, a long time ago, and it was about 20 years ago, because that's when I was an IOC member, it was through the ARC of Arizona that there was monitoring independently into the group homes. It was not an IOC function. It was through the ARC of Arizona.
And to piggyback on that, the ARC sent their report to the IOCs, HRCs at the time. And that was one thing that Karen Angela was our previous chair. She passed away about a year and a half ago. So, but that was always one thing that Karen was always very passionate about, was to get those ARC reports. We haven't seen those, of course, and apparently it's going to start up again. That's what I understand. So it was not us though, Lisa. It was not the IOCs. It was through the ARC, and then the ARC sent the report to us to review. And I think at the time it was just District 1, because District 1 was the majority. It was statewide?
Yeah, I remember going to Flagstaff.
Wow.
And monitoring, yeah. Okay.
And so the ARC sent reports to all all DDDs, all IOCs, correct? Okay. Okay, so anything else on statewide? Any questions? Perfect. All right. Eva, this next one, the review of SARS and ASH, motion and answer. Do you have any comment about that?
Yes. So I found it very interesting that the member that we sent the information about, well, first of all, in the letter, I thought it was telling that our patients with neurocognitive or neurodevelopment disorder are frequently in need of specialized services different from those that the state hospital is intended to provide. So, I mean, you know, having our members there, you know, they're not getting what they need. So the one that we sent the issues on our motion, in case nobody read it, was the fact that he hadn't had, he went over a month without an incident. He's getting one-on-one therapy with a assigned contact person, increased level of supervision, and regular sessions with the treatment team. And they, after multiple medical trials, he seems to be, the meds seem to be helping him. So actually what I found interesting was, because I read closed IRs, supposedly they were sending IRs, and so maybe we need to ask James where these IRs go that have seclusion, because it says in the orders for SARS, which is seclusion and restraint, all orders for the use of SARS, written or telephonic, must include the name of the, most probably the mental health provider ordering the seclusion or restraint, the date and time of the order, specific safety devices ordered for the use of the strain, if applicable, criteria for release, including the specific behavior to be eliminated, and the maximum duration of the seclusion and restraints. It is not acceptable that the patients will no longer exhibit the behavior that is dangerous to self or others as criteria for release. Now, in our monthly reports, all we get is, you know, mechanical or chemical restraint and how much they're in there. And since every month, so they send a monthly report of SARS involving DD members. It is provided unredacted to the DD staff on or around the seventh Thursday of each month with data from the preceding month. The first report was requested in September of 2022, and we've been submitting monthly reports since January of 2023. Upon the request of DD. In addition, HS submits the incident reports to the central DDD intake office the following business day, with every incident involving a DD member receiving treatment at ASH. And so my thing is, where are these IRs? And part of the issue is, since it is, okay, since supposedly they have in their SARS report, they actually have what specific behavior they were trying to eliminate in this chemical and physical restraint. And I don't think I have ever seen, when I actually got them, that they actually talked about the specific thing other than this general, that they were dangerous to self or others. And so I guess what I would like the committee to think about is, first of all, where are all these IRs on these ASH members? What category do they get put in? And on the same token, is there a way that if QMU gets these SARS reports from ASH, that possibly we find out, you know, in the IRs that we are eligible to see, what specific information, what specific behavior were they trying to do, and find out what was the criteria for their release? Because, you know, everything looked really, you know, that they were doing all this stuff and all this other stuff, but on the same token, because I noticed, if nobody reads the ASH criteria, that one of them, maybe behavior two. So this month, my favorite one, M, had three, and the one that we sent the motion on was not there, and the third one hasn't shown up. I think she showed up last month. So in other words, things are improving because, you know, the fact that they spent all this time on our motion person. So it just seems that because we're getting involved, they are taking better care of our three members that are in ASH. And so I guess what I need to do or our committee needs to do, is to find out from James where these ASH reports are. I mean, you know, which category do they put them in? And find out if they could make sure that we get their specific behavior that they're trying to eliminate, and why the behavior plan did not work, that they had to do chemical or physical restraints.
James?
Yes. So, for some of that, I guess I can answer some of that, is that there is no specific category just for Arizona State. It's based on the type of incident that is reported. So we don't have a specific assigned type or category for Arizona State Hospital. And because the Arizona State Hospital isn't a contracted vendor, when they come in under no provider, because, again, we don't contract with the Arizona State Hospital, so they're not in our system to put them all in. But we do preface the descriptions of all their incidents with, you know, per the Arizona State Hospital. You know, so there is a declaration at the beginning of every incident for those members that it's from the state hospital. But it isn't under a specific type or category that you'd be able to say, well, all of them will come in under this specific type or category. It's whatever they're reporting. So a lot of them come in, if they're restraints, they come in, they'll be under the restraint category, but they're not all because of that. Some of them are under other behavior. It just depends on what's being reported by the hospital, the state hospital.
Is there a way that we can single out the ASH reports?
You'd have to ask Leah and Michelle, because we don't pull them, they do.
We do not have a capacity way to do that. Michelle, you know better than I do, but.
So I was just looking at the monthly metadata reports to see if they could be singled out in that manner, because we send three metadata reports that are pulled from the focus incidents that are entered. And when I look at the provider incident to consumer ratio, it's not going to come up there because there's not a no provider category, but it is something that I can look into and see if we can pull a no provider category.
Leah,
if you look at the incidents per member, that one might show you the names of the individuals that are in the that are at ASH, and it might be able to provide you more information on that. Go ahead, James.
That's what I was going to say, is that there's only a handful of members that are at ASH, and you could pull them by those, by the individual members.
Okay. One thing, as I was reviewing the our motion that we sent in, as well as the answer, it might be my fault, because when I sent the motion in, I did not specify the incident report. The questions that I sent in were general in nature. They were the questions, you know, that you sent me. However, they were, and they are general, but if we wanted them to be specific to an individual or to an IR, we would need to specify that, and I did not. So, like question number one, what other least restrictive methods were tried and unsuccessful? Because what we got back, their answer is policy. It's all their policies, which we know because we've read the codes and the statutes. So we know what those are. It was interesting to see what they wrote down, and maybe just the fact that they're writing it down brings it all of this back to their awareness. But when we're asking question number one, what other least restrictive methods were tried and unsuccessful, that refers specifically to an incident. Was there an ordering physician for the restraint? Well, per the code and their policies, yes, there is. But on this specific one, was there? So if you go through the questions that we sent in, they can't answer it because I didn't send in with it, and I didn't know that was what was wanted, was that it needed to be specific to the three individuals or to specific incident reports. So if we want further clarification with regards to the motion that we sent in, we need to write it in specific to the incident report number. I don't know if we can get that information from them. So that might be something that the ASH IOC might be able to get, even though they are DD members. I don't know, Leah, Eva. You're on mute.
I know. So the biggest thing of it is maybe we don't have to ask ASH, because according to this, they have a monthly report that they send to the DD staff. And so is the DD staff that gets these monthly reports? Is that Leah and Michelle, or is that QMU?
It's probably behavioral health, I would think. Michelle?
So we get, as you were describing what you were reading from the response, where it says ASH submits monthly report of all seclusion and restraint events involving DD members. It is provided unredacted to DD staff on or around the seventh Thursday of each month. That is what I receive, and that is what I redact and send to you. I don't receive anything more than that. I don't know if something else goes to behavioral health within DDD. That's something we can look into. But what I send you is exactly what ASH sends me straight from Lisa Nguyen to email.
So maybe what we need to do is, since supposedly all orders have to include it, so maybe what we need to do is to have ASH send in their monthly report the date and time of the order, the specific safety device ordered for the use in the restraint, and the specific behavior to be eliminated, and for the maximum duration of the seclusion and restraints. Now, supposedly, according to the rule, and I had trouble with this, was supposedly the maximum was 3 hours with 48 hours in between, and yet they talked about 24 hours. And I did not understand how they got 24 hours when the policy said there had to be 48 hours between the two. And so I guess part of what my motion would be is to have ACT include that kind of information when they sent their monthly reports over, so that the IRs are, are not these generic IRs that, danger to self, or, he attacked somebody or whatever.
Okay. So, and I'm not trying to cut you off on this subject, but I think we're getting into an area where we need to have a subcommittee on this. We need to study this motion as a subcommittee and review what the questions are. And we can do this next month and come back to our next meeting some proposals for the committee to review based upon what we really want to know. But I think, we could talk about this all day, seriously. But I'm wondering if that would be okay with you, Eva, since you're the one that's very, I'll be happy to visit with you about it. Carolyn's real good about the medical stuff. Anybody, we can't have more than four, so, because it has to be less than quorum. So would anybody else like to join Eva on discussing this motion and their response and how to move forward on it? Okay. Eva, you and I'll do this, okay?
Okay.
We'll get together. You come here, I'll go to your place, or we can, talk on the phone like we always do, and we'll get this figured out. We'll review what their response was. We'll talk about what it is we really want to find, and then we'll present it at our next meeting in a more concise, cohesive, is this how we want to move forward? Let's vote on it and do it. Okay.
And this is Lisa. I'd like to join if I'm perfect. Available.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. Yes, and as long as if we're on a Zoom call or FaceTime or whatever, you got to show us where you're at. Yes. For those of you that don't know, Lisa's in the Dominican Republic cruising the Caribbean. I'm jealous. Wow. Yeah.
And Linda, I'll attend if I can, but if not, I can kind of be like a consultant.
Okay.
On the medical aspect of things. So.
Okay. Okay. So Lisa and Eva and I for sure. And we will talk to you, Carolyn, because we can't have more than three. Okay. We can't have four. Isn't that correct, Larry? Okay. Well, Michelle's shaking her head or nodding her head.
So. Yes, that's correct. Sorry. Couldn't get it off mute fast enough.
That's okay. All right. So that's how we'll move forward on that. All right. Next, thank you, Eva, for all your work on this seclusion and restraint and all your reading. It really is good. All right. Moving next to our annual report. I sent it to you guys. Were you able to read it? I know it's a little long, not as long as last year, but it's a little bit long. Were you able to read it? Carolyn, I've got your corrections. And I did quote Leah from the transcript. And so, and I think she was reading, that was a prepared statement, correct? Yeah. Okay. So that's what that is. So with regards to those corrections, and then I think there's a formatting issue under the billing, residential billing. And I just put residential billing and then I put our motion, and both of that was bold and underlined. And I need to have a little bit of a paragraph, and I think I'll italicize or do something to differentiate so that it's understood that that's all part of residential billing, the residential billing section. So did anybody else have any typos, grammatical information, Eva?
Well, I sent you an email last night and I
haven't seen it.
So I do believe that we should put specific information in the ASH section that they did not send the reports from, I wrote in there.
I did see that. But you know what, Eva, they were sending them. It's just that they were going to behavioral health. Behavioral health was not sending them to us. Is that what you're, are you talking about prior to January 2023?
Where all the IRs, where James and the QMU had to read all the IRs that they did not send. They didn't send those IRs.
James, I thought we had gotten all the IRs for the time frame. And Leah, I was in on that meeting with you and Carl. Everything that we've got, everything, and they have sent it within the correct time frame, correct? Yeah.
I believe that they did send them all, yeah.
As they occurred or at the end?
Remember, Eva, there was a point in time that there was a misunderstanding and their IRs were going straight to Behavioral Health Administration, and those have all been corrected. They've all been put into the system and they are all caught up, and the change was made that they're going to the right place.
We've gotten them all.
Well, actually, since there was something in the newspaper about ASH and the quality of, you know, I just thought the fact that they missed them, you know, during this particular time, and they never did that before, should be included in our report.
That was at the request of someone from the Behavioral Health Administration within DDD. It was not ASH changing a process. It was a misunderstanding internally in the division. But all of that information has, in fact, been shared back through the committee. And Linda did, in fact, have a meeting with our quality assurance manager as soon as we identified the breakdown in communication.
Okay. I didn't realize it was a communication. I thought it was maybe Ash's problem.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
It was a DD misunderstanding, and it's all been clarified. And I personally do not want to put that in the report. It's not necessary. It's been fixed. You know, it was just a misunderstanding. It wasn't done on purpose or anything else. So, you know, we don't need that negative.
I did not understand. I thought it was ASH and not okay. The DD.
Okay. Yeah, I did see your email and I remember that. Yeah, okay. Anything else? Any other corrections with regards to
Linda?
Yes.
Linda, this is Deb.
Hi, Deb.
Hello, on page 8.
Hold on. Yep.
The second paragraph that originates, it says, we're here today to propose consideration.
Yep.
You see that paragraph? About halfway down, it says the division also believes the current statute does not take into consideration, period. And then it goes on to say the current clinical indications.
I see. Thank you for getting that. Okay.
Yeah, that sentence be reworked.
What happens, because what I did was I copy pasted from the transcript, and the transcript is verbatim the way we talk. If you guys have not looked at this transcript, I mean, our meetings are like 70 pages long. It catches everything. There is no editing. And then like every 5 minutes, there's a minute bar but there's minute bars in there. And then it will stop in the middle of a sentence and say, Leah is speaking, and then it continues on. So I tried to go through here and take out all the minute bars and Leah is speaking and every other thing. But Michelle, I'm not being critical, Michelle. Please don't take it that way. It's just very interesting to hear how we really talk, or to see it, read it. It's terrible. But as an English teacher, it's terrible. Michelle, you had a comment?
I was just going to let you know, I do edit it to make for accuracy by following the minutes. But if you want me to change what it looks like in the format, just, you know, talk about it with the committee and let me know.
You're fine. And I was talking grammatical errors.
Okay. That's,
you know, when I read, it feels like I'm reading a thesis or a term paper or something when I'm reading these things during them. And believe me, I'm going to start looking at those a little more. I meant in preparation for the next annual report. I always review them. So anything else, Debbie, on that? Did you have any other comments?
No, there's a couple of sentences there that just kind of need to be reworked.
Talk to Leah. That's her quote. I'm kidding, Leah. I'll go through it. I'll make it look good.
The content was good. That first sentence just kind of stops, and then it should be probably a comma or something to connect with the next sentence.
I do have a comment with regard to the ECT. That's what this subject is, and I know you're going to probably have to hop off. But this subject, starting on page 8 for our annual report, is the ECT. And I don't know if you remember exactly, but I remember that I was called out on it in our statewide meeting because you had given us incorrect information. And Susie?
Yeah, Linda, that's correct. When I originally reported out to the committee, it was information that was made available to me.
Right.
And I was told that because of the law, ECT was not available to DDD members. And what was corrected was that it is, in fact, a procedure that is an access-approved procedure for behavioral health. What DDD cannot do is fund ECT.
Okay, because I want to correct this record in there.
I'm very sorry. I have to go.
Okay, thanks. I just want to correct what you put in there. Okay. So she said DDD, they cannot, it's access approved, but DDD, what did she say?
DDD cannot fund it.
Thanks, James. Okay. All right, I'll put that in there. Anything else with regards to the annual report then? Okay. All righty. Now where'd the agenda go? Carolyn?
They can't do it at ASH.
I'm sorry?
They can't do it at ASH. ECT cannot be done at ASH because they don't have the facilities for it.
Oh, correct. That's correct. Okay, so our next topic is number 8. I just want to know how we want to move forward on the medical and the deaths and mortality review questions that Carolyn has come up with. Eva?
So basically, I was wondering, should we make a motion to approve the annual report?
With corrections.
With corrections. Can I make that motion?
Larry, were you going to say something, Larry?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sure. Go ahead.
Eva wants to make a motion to approve the annual report with corrections. Discussed.
Debbie seconded it. All right. Let's have a vote. Debbie?
Yes.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Eva?
Yes.
Did we lose Mandy? I thought. She is. Hi, Mandy.
Hi.
Cute top.
Thank you.
You bet. So do you vote? How do you vote on this?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. We don't need to discuss. We've had the discussion. I'll make the corrections. And I do need I'll get it from Patricia, how many incident reports we have reviewed. And how many, is that still necessary, Larry? And the number of behavior treatment plans we've reviewed?
If you have that data, that would be great. I think the more you can have in your report, the better.
Okay.
To show your committee's work.
All right.
I can get you, this is Michelle, I can get you the number of incident reports you reviewed, but unfortunately I don't have data on the behavior plan.
I'll get that from Patricia. Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks everybody for that. I appreciate it. I'm just glad it's done. Anyway. All right. Carolyn, with regards to the medical deaths, the deaths, mortality review questions, how do you want to move forward on this? Because that was something we discussed several months ago, but we haven't, and I know you're starting your busy season, but how do we want to move forward on this?
So my thoughts are, first for item number one, I would love to, for DDD to help us understand the mortality review process. And what might be really helpful is if they could come to us at the next meeting with a flow chart of the mortality review process. It doesn't have to even have to be on the computer. It could literally be hand done. But I can tell you that I developed some very complicated procedures for Head Start because we were dealing with difficult situations and multiple organizations, and I would create flowcharts to help people understand the process. And so I think it would be really helpful if we could see at least the mortality review process flowcharted and perhaps the quality of care concerns process flowcharted as well. Then on for number two, I would love to get some current data on the top 10 causes of deaths in DDD members. For number three, a discussion of the fatal five preventable conditions. I'm wondering how these conditions can be better addressed in the person-centered care plans. I do feel like the person-centered care plans are sometimes very weak in terms of the health aspect of those plans. And then number four, I would love some more clarification on how unexpected deaths are handled differently from expected deaths. Number five, I would like a better understanding of the review of records required after a death. We were told that all deaths require a review of records for 90 days prior to the death, but I didn't see that listed in 6002M or any of the other policies. And it's possible I missed it in the policies, but I did not see it. So I'd like to know where that is in the policies. And then last item, when are death certificate information and or autopsy results used in the QOC concerns and mortality review processes?
Okay. In case you guys are wondering where those questions are, they're on page 7 of the annual report. They were submitted with that. So if you want to review those questions that she just presented. So we need a flowchart. We need clarification. What I would suggest is that we have a motion where we ask whoever in DDD, and I'm assuming it would be the mortality review board, but we will forward that to Larry. Larry can forward it to Michelle, and then it gets disseminated from there. That we have a motion requesting clarification and further information on these six questions that Carolyn has just discussed.
Can I make the motion, Linda?
You sure can.
Okay, so I, Carolyn, make a motion that we, at the next meeting, that we have DDD staff come to us and discuss the six questions just previously described.
Okay. Do I have a second? Eva, thank you. Do we need further discussion on this?
Well, we need Eva to verbalize her second for the camera and the video. I mean, and the transcript.
Eva seconds.
Thank you.
Sorry, Michelle. The recording can't see her hand being raised, right? Okay, so the only discussion that I would like to bring forward is, Carolyn, I have these questions, but if you could further explain like what you just said in the conversation, expand upon the question, specifying exactly what it is you would like for them to review, all right? Or to come to us with the answers for.
Would you do that?
Okay, just do that and then send it to me and then I will forward it on to Larry. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other comments? All right, let's have a vote. All in favor? Oh, wait, we have to do this verbally. Lisa?
Yes, aye.
Debbie?
Yes.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Mandy?
Yes.
Eva?
Yes.
All right, so 5 have voted for this. Thank you, Carolyn. I appreciate that we're moving forward on this because it was, we had quite a few meetings, monthly meetings where we discussed this. So I'm glad to be seeing that we're going to be getting to the bottom of it. I'm getting some answers. All right. Item number 9, IDD, mental health, the grant from Access. Eva, do you want to just take a few minutes and tell us about this?
Okay. So part of it was discussing what I asked the question of Leah. So so part of it is the survey. They want to get as many people as possible. And you know, so it sounds like DDD is doing a good job of reaching out to people in the DDD community, but it also includes people with IDD mental health issues that qualify for Access but do not qualify for DD. And I took the webinar, and so they're reaching out to the rural communities and the city communities, and they're there's also the letter in English and Spanish on the survey form for possibly doing an in-person thing. So I was going to ask the committee if you know people who have IDD mental health issues that are not in DD and pass the surveys out to them. Because what they want to do is, at least by March, is to be able to present to this. It's from the University of New Hampshire, this START team. And they want to present to Access what they can do about what part of the services are working, what are not working, especially maybe possibly in the rural areas versus the urban areas. And so the more people that take the survey and do the in-person interview, whether you are happy with your services or not happy with your services, would be really beneficial. So I think Michelle sent it out, right, Michelle, previously? So I just wanted to...
You sent it out, Michelle.
So I just wanted you to know that this is an Access-funded grant that's looking, because people with serious mental illness, turns out they sued and they have lots of rights. So if they go to a behavioral health hospital, they can keep their phone, they can wear their clothes, they have to have an exit plan. They just can't go into the hospital. They have to talk about how they're going to get them out of the hospital. And when our individuals go into a mental health hospital, you know, they're, at least when I see the IRs, there's none of that, except that 72 hours that they have to have a meeting with the support coordinators and discuss what happened. So it's none of this, you know, they went into the hospital. How are you going to get out? Like the people with serious mental illness, you know, plus the fact that in the rural areas, they don't have services. There's no providers up there, especially if you're not in DDD. So
Eva, I have some contacts in the mental health field and that are that spearhead committees, and they also have tentacles out. So I will get in touch with them and send that. So that's one way to get it out if they haven't already heard about it. You know,
it turns out I want you to know, just for you all, when I forwarded that email, I deleted tons and tons and tons of emails so that you only saw the fact that Leah and Mary DiCarlo were on that. They were the top ones. So anybody that attended that workshop got that email on the survey. So there were lots of people.
It's good to just get the word out. And we appreciate your advocacy on this and also attending it. That was good. So we already did 10. Was there anything else on that, Eva? I'm sorry. So number 11, the PCSP update. Lisa and Carolyn, you guys sit in on PRC. And I don't know if you guys are as picky about the PCSP as I am, but I have noticed that they are starting to get better as far as getting the PCSP completely filled out like the former ISPs were. So this transition from the ISP to the new PCSP document, where so much information was being lost, I think that the fact that we have brought this to DD's attention with specific BTPs and PCSPs, that was, I think it's instrumental in DDD becoming aware of the fact that the support coordinators need to fill these out more completely. I've been sick, just so you guys. Anyway. And I did read, I have read two by one particular support coordinator. There was not one thing missing in the PCSP. And I congratulated her on that. And she said, Linda, they're really making a push to make sure and doing some training to make sure that the PCSPs are completed. So as you two in particular go through the PRC and the behavior plans and the PCSPs, make sure that they're being completed and that all sections are filled out. And frequently there are rights that are enumerated in the behavior plan, and those rights restrictions, that are enumerated in the behavior plan, make sure that those restrictions are also listed in the PCSP under Roman numeral 10. That's where those go in the PCSP. And, you know, we've got to have spending plan. The signatures need to be there. Member unable to sign is not acceptable because generally the member is not the responsible party. A guardian is, or a rep or a PubFid. So just make sure that everything is completely filled out in the PCSPs. Eva?
Well, so when they send those things electronically to verbalize, so it turns out Jim and I have to sign, and then he has to sign for Rebecca, and I have to sign for the member.
But you guys are the guardians, correct?
Yeah. And so,
yeah, so that's why you have to sign.
I know. And so what I'm saying is, you know, there should be no excuse, because once they sign it, the system automatically sends all those forms to be signed.
Exactly. I know. So just a heads up to make sure that the PCSPs are completed, because it is a rights violation if they don't have a completed document. So, okay. With regards to our next meeting, does anybody have anything to say about PCSPs besides me? Okay. With regards to our next meeting, I was looking at the calendar. Our next meeting, November, is the first Monday, is the Monday right after Thanksgiving. And then, of course, we don't meet in December. So I'm wondering how you guys feel about not meeting again until January. Is that too long, or do you want to, excuse me, how do you, it's a discussion, so.
Well, the only problem comes in is Carolyn is asking somebody on the mortality committee to come, and hopefully I can get this stuff on ASH done, although.
Well, generally it takes a little bit of time to get with their schedules and calendaring for other, I'm thinking of the mortality board in particular. It might be a better scheduling tool if we could say January.
Yeah, I agree with that, Linda. I think it would give them more time to give us what we're asking for.
Yeah. Anybody have any thoughts? I know Debbie's daughter, as you guys know, is in the throes of preparing for a bone marrow transplant. She had her stem cells pulled last week, and now they're going to be doing bone marrow transplant. I'm just speaking on your behalf, Debbie, because I know that.
Yeah, November will be hard for me because that's within her 30 days where she's in complete seclusion. She does her transplant next Monday. She goes into the hospital this Sunday. And so she has to be watched 24/7 and be in complete seclusion. And so I'll be there in the day, her husband at night. So that might be kind of difficult for me. So I would be happy to wait till January.
I'm not opposed. This is Lisa. I'm not opposed to waiting for January. Okay. I think we'll still get emails in regards to joining PRC, et cetera, correct?
Yes.
And I have medical stuff coming up for me too that are coming, so it'll be easier to start over in January.
After the holidays, right?
Right.
We wish you luck with your medical, Mandy. Will you keep us posted on that?
Yes.
I'm serious.
Yes.
We care about you, and we want to know yes. that you're okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'll call you later and sort of explain it, but yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right, Eva, do you have thoughts? Gives you a little more time to prepare your stuff too.
Okay, I'm agreeable.
All right.
Besides that, it's 4-1.
My vote doesn't count. So, I know. So it's 3. Oh, wait, it is 4, isn't it? Sorry. Well, you and I need to do the ASH thing, and so let's, you know, we got enough on our, and I've
and
been
I'd remind, I'd like to join the ASH.
Oh, yeah. I got to write that down, Lisa. Send me a, Linda, don't forget me, right? Okay, so we will meet again then. Do we need to have a motion on that, Larry?
Yeah, I think that's good practice to do that. It's a committee decision, a committee vote. So yes. Right.
Since we normally meet monthly anyway. So, all right. Do I have a motion?
So Eva makes a motion to skip November and December and restart in January for IOC meetings.
Lisa seconds that motion.
Hey, Lisa, thank you. And verbal voting, Mandy?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Debbie?
Yes.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Eva?
Yes.
She sounds so...
Yes.
I made the motion. What do you mean?
I know. Begrudgingly, right? I'm kidding you. I'm sorry. All right. So our next meeting will be the fourth Monday in January. And in the meantime, we all have paperwork that we need to do, plus get ready for the holidays. And we'll come back in January, rested and ready to go. Larry and I had a conversation with regards to executive session and the incident reports. So Larry, if you don't mind, and I know James has a comment about this as well. So let's have this conversation. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah. In the course of the past few months, going back and forth with a couple of auditors, it's come to our attention that some of the items that were going into executive session for can be discussed in a public meeting, meaning the specifically the incident reports. If you give, say, like you give James the incident number, he can look it up and he can have a discussion about that incident report without divulging PII information on that particular individual. And at that point, we can have discussions without divulging whether it's male or female, whether it's the age of that individual or whatnot. So you can have a discussion about these reports in a public setting. Now, I understand that there is going to be some times when you need to do a deeper dive on a report. You need to get more into the details of what happened and whatnot. But I think it's best practice if the committee will have discussions on these particular reports in the public setting. That was my comment on that. And I do think it can be done. I do that with our ASH meetings as well. They do a very good job on that. And they go through a lot of incident reports and they go through what happened and they go through the details of the case without identifying that particular individual. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm uncomfortable with it personally, but James.
Yeah, that's my problem with it too, is that in the discussions, because we're sometimes talking about the details of the vendor, we're talking about a lot of times the member's first name is used, sometimes some of the details that might give away details about the member's life are used, that it's too easy to slip up and give away something that maybe shouldn't be said on a public meeting. That's the only thing I worry about.
It is. I agree, James. It does take practice. And maybe we do that. We start practicing today in our executive session. But that was just my comment on that. I do know that there are times when there are slip ups. Where they mentioned a he or she, and just that little bit of information will kind of sway somebody's decision or somebody's thought process on that particular individual, and identify that person. So I do understand that. I just wanted to float that out to the committee, we can have more discussions about this going far down the road,
Larry, my
I'll
question.
Kick that back to you.
My concern is, okay, we can start out the conversation knowing that we are going to try to keep any personally identifying information out of the conversation. However, as we get into asking more detailed questions that James answers based on information that he gives us, and then we ask more questions and it comes back and forth, we don't know where that discussion is going to go that could lead to clues, if you will, as to who this individual may or may not be. And I would rather, so it's the Auditor General that has said this, correct?
Yes.
So for us, because we've all signed confidentiality agreements, James has to be careful because it's his very job, you know, of what gets disclosed. And I would think that for our safety, all individuals involved, we would want to be in a setting where anything that may or may not slip in would be protected. And like you and I said, you know, we've done executive, I've been on the committee for 20 plus years. We've always gone into executive. We know a lot of these individuals already because we've been working in it for so long. And so we may slip up accidentally, you know, when we read the same incident reports on the same individual over and over again, other details come in that I'm just not comfortable having anything to do with incident reports outside of an executive session, except for a general nature with regards to questions like what we've discussed today with regards to mortality review or questions for ASH. You know, those are broad questions where individuals are not even discussed. So that's my feeling on it. Lisa?
I guess my question would be, what would be the benefit of reviewing the incident reports outside of executive session?
Other than it's just a public meeting, there is no benefit. The general public needs to, you know, has the right to know.
This is Carolyn. I feel strongly that the individual's right to privacy trumps the public's right to know, and that if we want to make the information public about incident reports, I think there are ways to do that without taking something that could be discovered privately in executive session to having something be done publicly with possible violations of privacy. And we are also discussing HIPAA information, which is protected by federal law. So I just feel very strongly with Linda that it would not be appropriate to have these discussions in public session. And I will also say, you know, I want Azeez to think about this personally. If somebody said to me, Carolyn, we're going to be discussing your information, your medical information in a public setting, and we're just going to have to practice about not disclosing something that might identify you as an individual and violate your privacy, I would say, hell no. So, you know, and I think our members deserve the same respect.
James?
Well, I was just saying that I think Larry had a good thing, though, is that if we practice, you know, we could do it in the session and then you can review the notes, right, and see how well we do and to see if how it looks, right? And I mean, it can't hurt us to try it to see how it goes.
Yeah, you know, I've sat through several executive sessions, and it's very doable. I mean, you guys only slip up maybe once, and it's really just you say a he or she, or you might throw in a name where it's really not necessary. So I think it's a good idea. We can try. If not, it's you know what, we'll take the next step. I'm not going to worry about it, but I wanted to float this idea by the committee and get your thoughts on it.
Lisa, did you have comments?
My only comment was, I was kind of agreeing with Carolyn as well, and just thinking about maybe an incident that may occur with my cousin, and having all the public or whoever is joining the meeting, because you never know who is going to join from the public, and then potentially describing the behavior and the individual. I mean, I think that it thwarts the conversation of discussion as well when we have to continually process having to indicate individual at this age at a day program. It thwarts the conversation and the discussion and kind of and that's just my opinion.
Carolyn?
I just wanted to add, I feel that there are two things that need to happen if we were to make this change. One is that DDD needs to make a strong case as to why this would be, the benefit would outweigh the risks, number one. And number two, DDD needs to explain why incident report information could not be made public in a more controlled manner, separately from ad hoc discussions of private individuals' circumstances.
Can I just clarify? It's not DDD. It's the Auditor General.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's the Auditor General. It's not specifically them, but it's just open meeting law in general. So that's the reason why I wanted to bring this up to the committee to see if there was interest in doing this. But it doesn't sound like. The committee is willing to do so, at least now. But we'll explore this down the road if need be. And I'm certainly not going to force the committee to do anything you're not comfortable in doing. That's not why I'm here. Like I mentioned earlier, we could always try to do this through the executive session now that we already have it scheduled and we're doing it. Give it a shot. See how it does. See how it works. I think James does a very good job on giving you the information without divulging a lot of information, if that makes sense. So, so those are just things that we can work through. We can table this discussion now and revisit this down the road. Eva, do you have a comment?
Eva?
Well, Larry had this discussion, and one time I tried to bring something up, and everybody shot me down. So
it wasn't everybody, it was me. You can call me out. It's all right. I have to monitor. You're right. I do. I'm the chair, and I have to monitor it. That's correct.
So basically, maybe what we could do to keep Larry and the auditors happy, it is, I read the closed IR. And so in some ways, possibly in the open meeting laws, we could talk about issues that we see without being specific. Like there are two issues that I have seen, and I'm waiting, and I made comments in the IRs. And of course, then you have to wait, plus the fact that half the time we get the fact that, this has nothing to do with the IR, so we don't need to discuss this. But then on the same token, two of my issues are, how we had the abuse and neglect training for a year that we always had problems with, and now when we have individuals who report something, then they're dismissed as not substantiated. And I said, why did we have that abuse and neglect training thrown down their throats for a solid year, and yet incidents get
tracking. They weren't tracking it. And Zane did say that they were not tracking whether or not possible incidents or PTSD effects, if you will, came about because of that training. And I believe it was in the last statewide that we had where, or maybe it was just our last meeting where I asked about it, but Leah did say, I don't know. I've read so much. It's in one of our reports where minutes where Leah did say that there is not much activity with regards to this. It's on a volunteer basis, but they are not, there's not a lot of people that are doing it and they're reviewing the curriculum. So that's a whole nother subject. I just wanted to clarify that with regards to the issues. We've said that we can bring the issues up during our public meeting, but I believe I agree with Larry and James and everybody, let's practice. Let's see if we can do it. And in the meantime, you know, we'll table this. Carolyn, did you have one more thing to add?
Sorry, no, I didn't.
Okay. Let's table this discussion. Let's practice in our executives, seeing how that works. And only if James is comfortable doing it, well, and us as well doing it, can we do that. But we have to be so careful with the PII. With that personally identifying information. Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, was there anything of a general nature that came up as a result of the incident reports this past month? Let me just ask everybody because,
I did have one thing, Linda. I just wanted to ask, you guys were getting your questions answered. I did review with my staff to start giving better answers, more advanced responses. And did you guys see a difference? Is it making a difference to you in the responses that you're seeing? Have you guys noticed a difference? I've gone over them. I've had the supervisors reviewing them to make sure that they're answering all the questions as thoroughly as possible, reaching out to vendors, even if it wasn't part of the investigative process, that they're still going out and trying to get answers to your questions, either from the vendor, from the support coordinator. There are a few there I noticed that they are still pending responses because they have reached out but have not gotten responses when it wasn't part of our internal investigation, say if they were not made into QOCs, but yet we're still trying to get those answers for you. But have you guys noticed the difference?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I missed it in my thing, but I have not seen any responses to IRs for a while.
The only one that's not done, it looks like, is the one from 10-3. So the one that is 921 is all completed.
And James, we're getting those by email, right?
Michelle, would it be able to answer that?
Because yes. I didn't see them. I haven't seen anything recently either.
No. The 921 response was provided to me via email to go ahead and distribute out to the committee, and that I was going to complete that task today. I get that taken care of to you within a business day or less of receipt from the quality team.
Okay, well, then I'll ask this question next time we meet then. Sorry.
And we'll have a few months off so we can really
review them. Yeah.
Yes. So let me just ask you, Eva, you read all the closed, correct? Carolyn, which topics do you read?
I read closed for medication errors and physical abuse IRs.
And closed, right?
Just the closed, yes. I don't read the open.
Okay. Lisa, what do you review?
Give me other abuse And there's a couple more. One moment.
If you guys could just email me your subject so I can make sure. Mandy, do you know which ones you do off the top of your head?
I don't remember. I'd have to go back to the email.
Okay. Right. Linda, you sent us an email reminder of in July of the ones that we recommitted to everything to the areas. So you sent it out, I believe, July.
In July? All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know it was recently.
I will resend that July so everybody knows, okay, what we're supposed to be doing.
And I'm terrible. So.
Well, this is volunteer, so you know we all do the best we can. Mandy, you've had some health issues. We're just glad to see you here. So thank you. All right. Anything else on the incident reports? I should have put PRC with that. Can I ask about PRC, Michelle? It's supposed to be incident report and PRC review. I didn't put PRC there.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying. We don't have anyone here from PRC today.
Well, I want to know what, okay, Carolyn, I've got your dates. Lisa, do you have dates for November? When you can?
I have my calendar out and I was going to, I'll email you based upon what you emailed me.
All right.
Okay. I believe last week.
All right.
I'll email the whole along with Patricia. Thanks. Bye.
Okie doke. And then Carolyn, did you have something to add with regards to PRC?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Not right now.
All right.
I probably will next meeting in January.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of trying to organize my thoughts on it.
Okay. Yeah, there's been a few things. You and I've talked. There's been a few things. So
yeah.
All right. Updates. Eva. Sorry.
So another general issue besides the abuse and neglect when they are unsubstantiated, when members complain, the other one is when mothers or fathers complain, guardians, I should say, when guardians complain about incidents about the providers and they become unsubstantiated. It's like the staff versus the guardians. And so, you know, I have two issues that I would like to specify in the IRs, but that is, you know, I've seen a lot of Christ R's where guardians have been pulling their hair out because everything is always unsubstantiated and nothing happens either in the day program or in the group home. And I don't know. I realize we had a long time ago, we had chronic complainers from guardians, but on the same token, some of these are not chronic complainers. And so that's why I have real issues about guardians versus staff.
Eva, it's not necessarily about somebody being a chronic complainer or that we honestly don't believe them. It is a burden of proof that we must identify and be able to. We have a burden of proof that we have to substantiate an allegation. And sometimes, especially in a he said, she said situation, we do not have enough proof to substantiate an allegation. And it makes it very difficult. And, and you know, that is really what it comes down to.
Okay.
And that, I understand what you're saying. It can be very frustrating for a parent to say this happened. And then for the staff or whomever to say this didn't happen, and then for us to then look at all the other ways that we can try to prove if it did or did not happen, and if we cannot, you know, then we have to weight people's the words of individuals, and then the burden of proof then to identify whether or not it did or did not happen, and that's what they have to do in QMU. And they have to do that, and it makes it very difficult. And I'm sure it is very frustrating for families if we cannot find enough proof to substantiate the allegation. But they think, well, it's absolutely true because I said it. Well, that's not, you know, that's not true. That's not how it works. I understand their frustrations, and I understand your frustrations when you read it in an IR and you say, well, this guardian said this happened. And then we might go back and we might find, say, that two or three witnesses said that it did not happen and they were there to witness it. And it still looks like we took the word of the vendor over the guardian. And maybe we did, because those three individuals who then, you know, were witnesses compared to, say, one person who said it did happen. It's all individualized, and I can't say specifics, but that those are the type of situations that come up where we unsubstantiate.
James.
Thank you.
James, I, along those same lines, do you track or take into consideration the number of times that a guardian may send in an incident report with regards to
They do track and trend incidents. So, I mean, they are looking at that, but it shouldn't weight any specific thing unless it's a repeat of the same incident. Like somebody is complaining over and over about the same exact incident and it's already been investigated. Unless a new set of proof came, you know, some new evidence was brought in with it. But each incident is looked at individually. And if you have made, even if you had, you know, made 100 previous allegations, it shouldn't matter of us looking into that one. We should be looking at it at its own merits. Now, I will say that in the case where a member has a behavior of making allegations, those are sometimes looked at, but each individual allegation is still looked at. It just might be how we react to it. There are certain situations where if, say, somebody has the same behavior, they make an allegation and 100 times before it's been found to be false, we may react to it differently so as not to feed the behavior.
I understand that. I'm thinking specifically of, not specifically, I'm thinking of reported incidents of property, what's the word? Being taken away consistently by the staff, and the parent calls in or the guardian calls in and goes to the trouble of writing this incident report. And there's more than one of the same thing. That's what I'm wondering. Because of course, I mean, I'm sorry, but I know from personal experience with Mark, with my son, that, and he's not with us, as you all know, so I can say his name out loud. So, but if things happened over and over again, repeatedly by the staff, and I went to the trouble to report those, and the staff is going to deny that it happened. Of course, they're going to deny it happened. How do you get around that when the parent is consistent or the guardian is consistently making reports? That's why I'm asking, do you track those kinds of things? How many times has this happened with this individual, with this staff?
Yes, they do track and, like I said, they do track and trend the allegations no matter what. And they are looking at those when they are reviewing incidents, but it wouldn't stop them from investigating something based on, oh, well, they've already made 10 other allegations about this, so we won't investigate this one. That wouldn't happen.
Okay, so my question is, you go and do an investigation on the current one, and you go there knowing, you go to the group home or the DTA, wherever the incident occurred, and you talk to the staff, and the staff says, we didn't do that. Do you say, look, we have got a pattern here. We've got 10 of you guys saying we didn't do it. And the parent says, yes, we did, or the guardian. Does that ever happen?
Yes. And then they would be looking for other types of evidence, though. So there would be, not only would that we be questioning the member, we would be questioning other members in the facility. We would be looking at if it was something where there might be some tangible evidence that they didn't have something, or they didn't get something, or they weren't allowed to go someplace, or whatever the rights restriction was. We would be looking for other ways to prove it. So it wasn't just one person's word. And again, you're looking at if there were multiple people. And again, how did the parent identify that it was being taken away? Was it that the member was the one that told them each time? And we have multiple witnesses, or maybe another member saying, no, they did have it. So it's very difficult to say with any certainty about any specific case. But we're looking at all those different ways of trying to prove or disprove an allegation.
Okay, I'm thinking of one in particular, and we'll talk about it in executive because I'm still bothered by it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. All right. Anything else on incident report of a general nature? Okay, everybody, it's noon, and we need to still have our updates, and we appreciate everybody hanging in there with us. Updates from DDD? Leah really kind of gave those, right? Yeah. James, do you have anything?
I do not have anything. I did want to say something really quick about Eduarda's service, and I wanted to say it was very nice. And for those of you who did not attend, October 21st in Tempe is now Eduarda Yates Day. The mayor of Tempe did a proclamation for Eduarda and presented it to her family because of all of her work, not only with DDD, but for her family's work in Tempe. And it was a very lovely service. And he presented a letter from U.S. Congress and a proclamation from the city of Tempe for her. It was very nice. So I was glad to be able to attend.
Such great recognition for her. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to follow up on that issue, right? That we talked about?
I did this morning already.
Okay, good. Perfect. Okay. Go ahead, Michelle. I don't know who else.
Joan may have a brief update.
Yes, I do. We had a new liaison start with the team last Monday. She isn't here with us today because she is getting all trained. her name is Morgan O'Hara. I think she's going to be a great addition to the team, and I will let her tell you about herself when she's able to attend one of your meetings. But I think that she has a background and a skill set that she'll be bringing with her that I think is going to be an asset for our team as well as for the individual IOCs.
Thank you. Michelle, you've done a great job. I hope you still keep working with District Central. Just saying. Just saying. Joan, if you heard that, I'm putting in a plug. So go ahead, Michelle.
Well, thank you, Linda. And I do want to express my condolences on Eduarda. I did not know she had passed. Other updates we're looking at is ADOA and the health plans as well.
Larry? Is he on mute?
I was. Sorry, I was double muted. My other headphones died, so I had to switch them out. I do not have any updates for the committee. The only comment I had was the annual report, which you guys have already covered that already. So I have no additional comments on that.
Are we the last questions? Are we the last ones? I'm sorry.
You are the first.
Oh!
Consider yourself number one.
Liz, okay, so I will send it to you with the corrections either this afternoon or tomorrow. And then I'm going to try to find last year. I know right where last year's report is and put it in the format that you put it into. So it'll be all ready to go. And I just have to get the final information from Patricia and from Michelle. So other than that, it's pretty good. I mean,
you still have 8 days, so you got plenty of time.
I'm tired of thinking about it. The truth.
I know.
Get
it off your shoulders. So I understand.
When I finished it last week, it was like, I mean, I actually sat down and watched a movie because I didn't feel guilty.
Good for you.
Okay. Nothing else, Larry?
No.
Okay. Michelle, Frederica, maybe? Ian?
Hi, this is Frederica. I don't have any updates.
We were talking, what was that access that we were talking about? The X. I can't remember. That you might have known about.
About visiting the facilities.
Oh, that's right. Can you find that out, Frederica, for us? If that's still some. The question is whether Ash Access needs to have us continue to be the eyes and oversight for the ICFs within District Central. And also, do they still want someone from the ICFs to sit in as a non-voting member of the IOC, District Central IOC?
Okay. If you can just send that to Michelle in writing so that I can get it correct, because that's way before my time, so that I will be able to get it to the right persons to ask that question and I can get you an answer back.
Okay. Unless you're a real old timer, you didn't remember that. So, you know.
Yeah, that's way before my time. So, yeah. But I don't mind taking it back for you. No problem.
All right. Thank you, Frederick. Appreciate that.
And so I'm not sure if Dawn McReynolds usually has an update for you.
Ian's on. Also.
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, Linda and Michelle. Yeah, nothing from myself or Dawn at this time.
Any comments about anything that we've discussed in our meeting so far?
No, nothing from me. I think Dawn is here. Let me double check and see if she had anything for you.
Okay.
I'm here.
Hey, Dawn.
Hi there. You know, Linda, I remember the HRCs back when I was at the Department of Health, so I get it. I remember all of those. I think, you know, with the IRs and the conversation and the questions of the investigations, I think it's really helpful to be able to understand that process and how, you know, you quantify, you know, guardians making complaints and you guys are discovering that. So that's great. I did want just to add, Linda, that I've spoken with Leah, and I understand that this IOC will not be meeting again until January. So we're going to work with Michelle, I hope, or the new person I have, you know, to go ahead and schedule those peer support and family support trainings. But I really want to take a deeper dive in that training for the IOCs to understand the access policies that drive those trainings. I just think it's very valuable information to become well, you know, have that experience and understand all of access's policy. They do such a great job in lining out all of the requirements. And so Leah and I, and I'm not sure if Summer or somebody from Mercy Care, if she's spoken with them, but we're gonna partner and get it done. So we're probably looking at the calendar year of 2024 to kind of roll that out. And maybe Michelle, you might wanna think about if you think it would be better to have like a statewide IOC presentation, and then we can bang it, you know, out that way, or whatever you prefer. We're flexible. That's all I have.
Dawn, we do have statewide IOC meetings quarterly, and I mean that would be, but generally it's just the chairs that are there. Other members are invited to attend, but it would be separate from this particular. I don't know how long the training would take or what that would look like, but you know, I'd be happy to work with you guys too on that.
I was just going to ask, maybe, you know, we could have a conversation,
sure, and
show you kind of what the plan is, and then we can decide what is best.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
Just keep me in the loop. I'm happy to facilitate anything for our committee, of course. So,
of course, will do.
Thanks, Dawn. Michelle?
Oh, is Ava waving at me, or is she?
I believe she had a question.
Ava, did you have a question? I'm sorry. Where'd she go? Oh, she's on mute.
Stop rocking. So I found out that the behavioral health hospitals with the United Healthcare and Mercy Care have QMUs that do incident reports in the behavioral health hospitals.
What's an MU? What's an MU?
QMU, quality management unit. They have a quality management unit for behavioral health for the healthcare people. And I was wondering if you could, so do you read type of incident reports, restraints when they're in the behavioral health, and do you send them over to DDD, or you just take care of them in-house in your quality management unit?
Are you asking me if OIFA does that? No, but Eva, if you want to type that out, it's the best way to get that over to Michelle so I don't miss any pieces. If you can do that, thank you, Linda. And certainly we'll look in if that stays within the quality team or if that goes anywhere else. Maybe Summer knows what Mercy Care does. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure about the QMU. Are you saying that it's something specifically within the hospital? Because of course, like, both health plans have their own quality management that reviews concerns that come through us or grievances and complaints. But are you talking about directly that the health plans or something that the hospitals directly have within their agency?
Well, I just heard that the health plans, so you some of you caught it. So I found out that the health plans have a quality management unit. And so I was just wondering how that actually works. You know, it just seems like all these people have these quality managements, and do you do the ones in behavioral health?
Eva, this is Linda. This is not related to their updates. It's a separate, and maybe if we have a question where they can actually prepare an answer with regards to their QMUs, they can give that to us at our next meeting. Would that be all right with you?
That's fine. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Lisa, you had your hand up real quick.
No, I'll wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mandy, you're okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, Summer, I'm sorry. Did you say you did or did not have updates for us?
I have a quick update. But just to quickly respond back to Eva, there is every health plan, every agency has their own quality management. We can go into more into that if that's the case in January. But they do their every agency does their own investigation based on who's your contracted providers. So hopefully that kind of gives a high summary. A quick update is that Mercy Care is updating our webpage. So it will be going live
November 8th. So please take some time and check out our new website. Hoping it's not only more user-friendly, but it looks better. So please check that out. And then I'm not sure if this has been discussed at previous IOCs, but DDD, United, and Mercy Care are working together utilizing the ARPA funds. And one of them that has moved forward is providing Relias training free of charge to our behavioral health clinicians throughout the state of Arizona. So it's been really great to see on the Mercy Care and who's been signing up to take these Relias trainings so that they can hopefully expand their scope of practice to work with this group much more in the future. But those are my updates if anybody has any questions.
Thank you, Summer. Pretty interesting to take a look at your new website. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Michelle?
Oh, I just have a little short update. I just wanted to give everybody a reminder about once a month on the Friday prior to the meeting, I send an email from the our general shared inbox. It's dddiocs@azdes.gov. In that email, I call it the Friday reminder. I provide the link for the meeting, the call-in numbers, but you also receive a copy of the agenda, a copy of the Arizona State Hospital Seclusion and Restraint Report, and copies of metadata reports for your review. If you have any questions about any of that, just reach out to me individually and I'll be able to guide and assist where I can. And then when DDD Quality provides responses to the IOC questions from incident reviews, I don't wait till that monthly email. Instead, what I do is no later than one business day after receiving it, sometimes same day, then I'll send that out to you via the same email with a spreadsheet copy of their responses so that you can see your questions, the IR number, and go back and review those through the shared drive with the incidents if you like. I do also put a copy of that in your shared drive. There's a folder in there so that you can review all previous responses as well from the quality team if you'd like to, for you know any tracking and trending you do yourself. At the close of this past IOC statewide chairs quarterly meeting in October, the next statewide chairs meeting has been scheduled for January 16th. That meeting has been scheduled for a PM meeting starting at 5:30 in the evening. And then my last update is the DDD public town hall meeting coming up for the following month. November is being held on November. Oh, sugar. Oh, here it is, on November 2nd. I almost forgot to update that. And so that next public town hall from DDD is on November 2nd. That's all my updates.
Okay. Thank you. And we appreciate everything. You're juggling a lot of IOCs, five of them. So it's a lot of work. I know just what I ask of you is a lot. Then multiply that times five. So we appreciate, and we're glad that you've got somebody on board to help.
It's good to have another liaison. I think it is definitely necessary. But anytime you need anything, feel free to reach out to me. It's not a bother. I'll do what I can.
I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. We will... thank all of those who have been in attendance today who are not a member of this committee or need to be in our executive. If any of you have any comments or questions, you can reach out through Michelle to me. And if you need anything on our next agenda, which will be in January, just let Michelle know and she can forward that on to me as well. So from District Central IOC, thank you for being here. And we will now go into our executive meet. We have a motion to go into executive.
This is Carolyn. I make a motion to go into executive.
Thanks, Carolyn. I have a second. Mandy, you need to turn off mute so the recording can hear you.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Mandy. All right, so let's see. Mandy, how do you vote to go into, on the motion to go into executive?
Yes.
Carolyn? You're on mute.
Sorry, yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Eva?
Yes.
Is Debbie still on?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the yeses have it, and we will now thank all of you again.
Do we just click on the thing? We have to mute and then we go use the thing, but we don't close this meeting, right?
Correct. Because we have to come back out to close this meeting. All right. Okay. Thanks, everybody. See you in executive.
Thanks, Linda.
This is Lisa. I'm having a hard time finding the link to the executive. Was it emailed on the exact same day?
No, Lisa, I did not email the link for the executive session. I did put
it in the chat.
Chat here, and that is a live link for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Hold on 1 second, Eva. You're going to have to give me the number one more time here in a second. Wait 1 second. Hold on. The computer is slow. Okay. 213-40-807. Okay. What is your question? So this actually was substantiated, not unsubstantiated. It was it was other abuse, yes. Let's see. Okay, hold on 1 second. Okay, so let me make sure I have the right number, because that was not a missing, that's not a missing member. So let me go ahead and tell me the number one more time, because maybe I wrote it down wrong. Okay, I did write it down wrong. All right. No, I got it. Nope, that is also not a missing member. No. And again, so we're practicing not using members' names and stuff. So this the one that you gave me is a multi-member incident, and it's an accident. It was a vehicle accident. Well, this is obviously not a missing member, so obviously we have the wrong incident. Yeah, it's okay. I know. I understand the feeling. I mean, when we get in so many incidents, they start to blend together for me too. Lisa, this is James. I just have a quick question about the first plan. What was the actual teaching?
Linda, I have one question or comment. You know, since you're getting the IRs and the PRCs, you know, one of the things that has been...
No, we don't see the IRs and PRC.
No. The numbers. You remember you're going to get Michelle to get the numbers to put in the annual report?
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to do the how many PRCs? You know, one of the other things that we have clogged up my email with are early notifications of policies. So we, you know, technically we have been notified of all those early notification policies. And it would be, since they are going to go on forever and ever, it seems to me that in the annual report, we should put the number of how many of those early notification policies we've had for the last year.
I don't know that, and I don't know who would even know that.
I think that would be impossible because I get like 30 a day.
How about if I just say that we review all new policies, and per statute we are now receiving them 30 days in advance so that we can discuss it.
Yeah. Okay, because I mean that is a big, I'm sorry, it's a big responsibility getting all those early notifications. Oh, here comes Leah, maybe she knows.
Well, the rule says that we send you all new and significant changes to any policies. And we in the policy review team have wanted to err on the side of transparency rather than not sending you what we believe might be substantial changes to policy. Is that not what the committee wants?
No, okay, but I'm just saying that in the annual report, it should be recorded that we are doing this, because technically I know Linda looks at them and sometimes I scan them. And then 30 days later, when I get the
public notice,
yeah, mm-hmm. then I can eliminate the early notification. And sometimes there are issues in there that I have to, my husband gets aggravated because I pin them all.
I think that what Eva was asking, and correct me if I'm wrong, to put in the number of policies that we have reviewed. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, you have that number, Linda? I don't track it.
Pardon me?
I don't track the number, do you?
Can I just say blankety blank no?
Just say several. We do several. How about that?
There's a lot. I'll just say
possible way we can put a number on it, because they're all in it. Like I see them all in there, but there's no way I can read them all. I have a life outside of,
you know what, and I appreciate the fact that we get them, because we are the IOC that requested it, and it came about legislatively. We had to go and get that changed in the legislature, because we didn't know about the 30-day, or we did not know about that abuse and neglect curriculum, didn't find out about, and I remember the timing because it was right when Mark passed away, and I was not looking at policies for sure. So by the time we were even, it came to our attention to where we would have made a comment, it was past any suggestions from us. And so it was my hope that just as the DDAC receives the policies 30 days in advance so that the committee can discuss them, that the IOCs would be given that same consideration. So that's why we get it. And I'm grateful that we have this time, because if something comes up, you know, that's important, and especially as a rights violation for possibly the members, as the abuse and neglect curriculum we felt was, then we're able to talk about it as a committee, send in our comments, discuss it, and hopefully make change for the better.
Eva. No, I'm
Oh, wait, Mandy's been trying to talk. Okay. Just a second.
I'm not complaining. There's just tons of them.
Oh, I know. I know. I get the same ones. Eva.
Well, now I got the SARS report. Actually, they've been very interesting, especially reading IRs, finding out information. So I figured we did at least 150 to 300 early policies.
Well, I'll just put in many.
Many?
I don't want to be inaccurate, you know? We'll just, numerous or something to that effect.
You could put more than 200.
Huh?
More than 200?
I don't know. I have no clue. And I mean, I don't even want to begin to guess.
Well, we get them.
This goes to the legislature. It goes to the governor. It goes to a lot of people. And I don't want to be inaccurate. And they go to all the committees. So, you know, if the other committees want to guess or have a number, then they can get it from them, not us. But I'm just, for accuracy's sake, I'll mention the fact that we do review that.
Or review on a monthly basis so that they know it's a reoccurring monthly basis.
We are weekly. It's weekly. And then and then we discuss it monthly. So
or daily. Many
or daily, that's right. Anyway. Okay, I mean, I'm sorry, Lisa, what?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think if we review many on a monthly basis, it at least gives a description that it is a lot every month.
Okay. I'll do that. Okie doke. That's referring back to a previous agenda item. So we were safe, but it was the purpose for coming back was to get out of executive and to close this meeting. I appreciate everybody's concerns. You guys know how to reach me, how to reach DDD. We won't meet again until January. I will get with Lisa and Eva and Carolyn as available to review the whatever it is we were going to review. it's the ASH, right? And Carolyn, you're going to get me the medical stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All righty. Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion, we adjourn.
This is Lisa. I second that motion.
Thank you. Eva, vote?
Yes.
Debbie?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Mandy?
Yes.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Hallelujah. Pass the plate. See you guys in January. Bye, everybody. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.